Welcome to the All Sides Reporter Roundtable, where we catch up on the political news of last week and preview our week ahead. I'm your host, Anna Staver. Joining me at our not-so-roundtable this morning is Jeremy Pelzer, politics reporter for Cleveland.com. Good morning, Jeremy.
Good morning.
And Marty Schladen, reporter for the Ohio Capital Journal. Welcome back, Marty.
Hi, Anna.
And Joe Ingles, reporter for the Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau.
Happy Monday.
And happy end of the Olympics. I guess that's actually a little sad. It's on to LA in 2028.
Yeah, well, the U.S. came out on top, so that's good.
When Vice President Kamala Harris takes stage in Chicago next week, Sherrod Brown won't be there. Our U.S. Senator says he's skipping the Democratic National Convention. It's an unusual choice, not only for Brown, but for senators running for re-election more generally. Bernie Moreno gave a speech at the RNC, as did Carrie Lake of Arizona, Sam Brown of Nevada. Basically, if you're a senator in a swing state, you show up to the convention and you give a speech in as close to prime time as you can possibly get. But Jeremy, Brown doesn't want any of that.
He doesn't want any of that, and that's notable. He said on CNN that, quote, "I often skip conventions." And that's pretty, that's kind of news to me, because he has gone to every Democratic National Convention since he was first elected to Congress in the 1990s. So the fact that he is not going this year seems to be a clear sign that he doesn't see the Democratic Party brand as an asset as he runs in a pretty competitive Senate race here in Ohio.
Yeah, Marty, Ohio Right to Life President Mike Onondaga called the move weird, sort of turning back that phrase that they're trying to pin on Republicans. But it is weird, right? It is a weird, I mean, it's a, I understand why he's making the choice, but it is unusual for a senator in a competitive reelection race.
Yes, it is unusual. A question I have is whether John Tester of Montana is doing the same thing. Because I think what's happening here is, you know, Donald Trump wants to nationalize this election as much as he can, make it about the same three national issues, inflation, what he claims is going on the border, and the economy more generally. But Brown wants this to be an Ohio election and be about, you know, workers' rights. And I guess the national issue he wants is reproductive rights. But it does not probably help him to run real close to Kamala Harris.
Trump won Ohio in 2020, 53-45. So it makes sense that Brown would be concerned, because getting 8% of voters to split their ticket in a presidential year is going to be no easy task. But Joe, the New York Times published a story this weekend saying there's some private polling in Ohio that might show a much tighter presidential race. According to the New York Times, these private polls show Trump receiving less than 50% of the committed vote.
Yeah, I read that, and I was intrigued by that to see, you know, what they were saying. And I've been hearing that from people, but I haven't seen polls to that effect. But I think, you know, the thing with Sherrod Brown, the thing we have to remember with him is he has always been like very the big things he champions, the CHIPS Act, worker things, you know, the unions, things like
that. Fixing the pensions.
Yes, fixing the pensions. These are things that are also Republicans like him. And I live in a very Republican area, as you do, and I listen to what neighbors say. I don't hear a lot of banging around, you know, saying Sherrod Brown is horrible. I just don't hear it. It's mostly on social media where you hear that. But ordinary folks, they know Sherrod Brown. He's more independent-minded, and I think that he can play. He can stay away from the convention, for sure.
Jeremy, if Trump is actually under the 50% mark here in Ohio, that would be huge. And it would also indicate a pretty significant shift in the mind of Ohio voters from just a couple of weeks ago. So the AARP poll taken during the last week of July gave Trump 52% and Harris 42%. So the New York Times didn't say where Harris was in that poll. But if Trump is now at 50, I can't imagine Ohio is in play, but I'm seeing a lot on social media from hopeful Democrats about it.
Well, if you look at the AARP poll, if it's a head-to-head matchup between Trump and Harris, it's 52-42. If you look at the full ballot, though, Trump is under 50% in that AARP poll. He only has 48%. one big reason for that is that Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is pulling 9% in that poll. So it looks like a lot of Trump voters would otherwise, if it was just Trump and Harris, would vote for Trump, but they would go for RFK as it is. And that's actually what the ballot looks like, because RFK looks like he is qualified for the ballot, along with Jill Stein, Chase Oliver, who's the Libertarian candidate. We have yet to get official confirmation, but it looks like that both Harris and Trump will be on the ballot as well.
I think it's important to point out again that polls are just a snapshot in time.
Right.
You know, I don't know that the stuff about RFK eating roadkill was in the public domain at that point.
Such a weird story. Speaking of weird,
that was bizarre.
And, you know, the Trump Vance campaign has not had the best 3 or 4 weeks. So what perceptions are now in August are likely to change as the public becomes more educated. And who that's good news for, who that's bad news for, we're going to have to see.
Let's talk about Ohio's other U.S. Senator, J.D. Vance. He's been out on the campaign trail, attacking Harris's new running mate, Minnesota Governor Tim Walz. Both men are military veterans, but Vance is accusing Walz of retiring to avoid going to Iraq. So Walz retired in May 2005, his unit deployed to Iraq about a year later. Joe, this reminds me a little bit of the Swift Boat attacks against John Kerry in 2004.
Yeah, it does. And here's the thing. He retired. You can retire in the military with 20 years. So he went past his retirement date by 2 years. And yes, he went, you know, he retired before they were shipped off. But, you know, that's not, I don't know that you can make that claim that he did it just to keep from going to war or whatever. Certainly they can try to make that claim. But I don't know how this plays among veterans, because I've been seeing some veterans, talking to some veterans, and they seem to, you know, a lot of veterans think you served. You know, if you serve as a file clerk, you deserve, you know, whatever. They feel like veterans who serve in combat sometimes make like they're separate, like they're better or whatever. And a lot of veterans don't feel that way. So you kind of risk, you know, taking your veterans and splitting that, you know, out, because it's not playing well with every veteran.
Marty, this is not a new attack against Governor Walz. The Republicans who ran against him for Congress and governor have also said these very same things.
Well, what Joe just said is true. He was processing out of the military before the war in Iraq. And it's somewhat interesting that J.D. Vance is doing it, because he's making this distinction that he's served in a combat zone, but he's never seen a firefight. So here's another guy who was, you know, calling out someone else's service, who apparently hasn't seen or heard a shot fired in anger himself. And it feels a little Swift Boaty, you know, but in that case, you know, John Kerry
was in combat.
Yeah, was in combat, was wounded multiple times. And because George W. Bush avoided service, Karl Rove sought to take that strength and turn it into a weakness when it comes to Kerry. This feels a little bit the same, but I don't know if these attacks are really getting any traction.
Yeah. According to Vance's memoir, Hillbilly Elegy, for those wondering, the Republican nominee was, quote, lucky to escape any real fighting. He served as a press person for the Marines during his tour. So although he deployed to combat zones, he never saw direct combat. But Jeremy, I'm not really sure how this plays out, but I don't know. Personally, I'm not sure that the bar for whether you served your country is whether you were shot at.
Right.
It's not. Like, you can't have everyone on the front lines. And I don't really like the argument that if you're not, you know, receiving active fire, that you're not somehow serving your country by being in the military. I think that this is just an initial, as far as the attacks on Governor Walz, that this is just an innate, we got to get, it's a sort of define people before they can define themselves. It's an axiom in politics. And in most cases, I think one poll showed that 70% of Americans did not know or really have an opinion of Walz when Harris announced that he would be the nominee. And so this is an attempt to define him before he can define himself. And it can be very effective. Just ask President John Kerry how that worked out.
Just one quick thing, too, that one reason why this may not get a lot of traction from the Trump-Vance campaign is that, you know, Walz did say something about carrying a gun into combat and, you know, later said he misspoke. And JD on the Sunday shows yesterday kept saying it's about not telling the truth. But he's running with Donald Trump, who made like 160 misleading statements during a press conference. JD, I got a campaign fundraising email from him saying that he just got off the phone with President Trump and they were talking about me, you know. So when it comes to veracity, their record is not great.
And while we're on the subject of Ohio's junior senator, the Trump campaign says it was hacked. And that's how a lengthy vetting document about JD was leaked to the press. Two people familiar with the document have confirmed it was authentic and was commissioned by a campaign law firm that represents a number of prominent Trump advisors. And the leakers also claim to have emails and documents related to Trump's criminal cases. Joe, this reminds me a lot of the WikiLeaks dumps of the Clinton campaign emails in the weeks before that election.
Yeah. And that's what it reminds me of, too. And, you know, it was leaked to Politico, I believe it was. And, you know, a reputable news, let me just put this out there. Reputable news places, when we get something leaked to us that we know was illegally gained, we will not use that. We will not use that on, you know, to put it anything out there because it's illegal. It came to us illegally. And so I think, you know, Politico hasn't really done much with it, but we do know that it exists. And, you know, the question becomes, who gets it? Where does it go? Who gets their hands on it? You know, what other tentacles are out there? You know, that's the thing that we need to watch for with that.
Yeah, it's a long, complicated conversation about when to publish. When does the public interest override the nature of how it was obtained?
Right.
Well, one thing that's interesting, too, is, I mean, this is how they vetted Vance. And since Vance was named, there have been a whole lot of questions about how good of a job that was because all these things, controversial things he said, keep coming to light. So I also wonder if there's really anything all that explosive in there.
I suspect not. I think we'd be more interested in these alleged emails about his criminal defense and strategy and what they're saying when they think no one is reading.
Yes.
But who knows, right, Jeremy? I mean, like, it'll depend on whether these start dropping, whether whoever has taken them starts just releasing them like WikiLeaks did. I think that's part of what made it a news cycle was WikiLeaks would just dump this stuff to the public.
It has, and as Joe said, it's up to news outlets to determine what to do with that information. I mean, sometimes it can be a gray area. Look at the Pentagon Papers when the New York Times and Washington Post got this information about the Vietnam War in the early 1970s, and they had to go to court to show that it wasn't a national security, that it was not illegal to publish under national security rules. So it's kind of up to individual journalists and news organizations to make that determination. As far as Vance and all these, you know, all the comments that are now coming up, I think anyone, even a 39-year-old who's pretty young and doesn't have that much experience in politics, is going to have some explaining to do about past comments they made. I don't think that many people going in would think that the childless cat lady's comment would take off the way it did. I mean, I'm not saying that that it's completely innocuous, but that it would really take off the way it did. And so the question is, what are people now holding on to that they're going to release in October as opposed to what they're releasing now? But the same thing applies, which is a lot of people don't know who J.D. Vance is, especially nationally. And if you can define him before he can define himself, then you've done your job to help Kamala Harris and Tim Walz get elected.
Coming up, why advocates for trans youth are furious over a local judge's ruling. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7. NPR News.
New from the Embedded podcast. Female athletes have always needed grit and talent. But for decades, they've also needed a certificate.
There was chit-chat about, is that really a woman?
And even now, they're still being checked and questioned. Their story is the newest series from CBC and NPR's Embedded. It's called Tested. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the All Sides Weekly Reporter Roundtable, where we talk all things Ohio politics. I'm your host, Anna Stever. Still with us this hour is Jeremy Pelzer, politics reporter for Cleveland.com, Marty Schladen, reporter for the Ohio Capital Journal, and Joe Ingles, reporter for the Ohio Public Radio, State House News Bureau. Republican Senate candidate Bernie Moreno is crisscrossing our state on what he calls a Defend America tour. The tour kicked off in Chillicothe, where Moreno talked about immigration, inflation, and public polling.
In polls right now, we're either even, down two, or down four. We were down five, six, and eight. So now we're going to open a can of whoop-ass on him, and we'll see a big jump in the polls. But we're going to do it when people are paying attention.
Joe, you've been following Senate hopeful Bernie Moreno around the state. What is he been saying on this bus stop tour?
Well, I mean, that's it. He was the whole time he was down there, there were some protesters who were outside. And his remark to them, he kept saying it over and over, is where's Sherrod? Where's Sherrod? Where's Sherrod? Well, you know, Sherrod Brown has been down to Chillicothe many times. In fact, he was one of the reasons that the VA was able to, you know, keep their presence down there and keep the people employed in those jobs down there. But, you know, Bernie Moreno has been spending a lot of time going after Sherrod Brown. And, you know, here's the thing. I'm not seeing a lot of platform or positions or ideas, new things coming from the Moreno campaign on these stops. It's mostly here's, you know, Sherrod is the bad guy. Go after him.
Jeremy, one of the Sherrod Brown re-election campaign, or I think actually it's the Ohio Democratic Party, I don't think it's Brown's campaign, is following Moreno on this bus tour with a large, obese, inflatable cat smoking a cigar. They are trying to pin him as a bad businessman. That seems to be the main line of attack, right, against the Moreno campaign.
Yeah, I should add there's a caveat that if you Google, Democratic protest fat cat or something, this fat cat has been around. You can rent this inflatable cat,
they didn't get it special for edition. Bernie.
No.
It's not special to Bernie. I don't know how much you want to spend on an inflatable fat cat wearing a top hat for your next birthday party or bar mitzvah or something. But if you
I'm gonna get it for here at the round table and all sides, it'll just be like in the corner of the room.
I think it would be an ideal guest. It'd just full of hot air, though. I think that the cat. There's a reason they chose this cat, though. It's that they want to portray Bernie Moreno, they being the Democratic Party, as being this wealthy businessman who got rich founding a chain of Cleveland area car dealerships, and therefore isn't really in touch with what blue collar Ohioans really want to do. This is Bernie Moreno's attempt to define himself before others can define him. And it's what's going on right now in August. We're months out before campaign season, and he's out trying to actually meet people on the ground, and Democrats are trying to portray their image of him and convince voters of that.
And as far as running on issues, I think it was your story, Joe, laid out pretty clearly that a lot of the issues that Moreno is stuck with probably aren't all that popular in Ohio. He's gotten all the support from anti-abortion groups. Well, we know that abortion rights won by 14 points here. And there are probably other things as well that he doesn't support. So it's probably better for him to talk about Sherrod Brown than what he wants to do.
Yeah, and you look at, Sherrod Brown, some of the issues that he talks about, he's got an ad out there about how he's tough on immigration, right? Well, that plays
tough
well.
On fentanyl. I've seen that ad
yeah.
a lot.
Yeah, so those are playing well with those people who are in the middle. And, you don't win any race by focusing on your base. You win the race by capturing the people in the middle and the people who might be sitting home because they're unenthused. And if you get enough of them, you win. And that's how Sherrod Brown has kind of won, because if you look back at the numbers when he's run, you can see that he has had a lot of times where independent-minded voters have come over and put him over the hump. So I think he's banking on that.
Let's move on to our next topic, which is House Bill 68. The law banning puberty blockers and hormones for transgender minors is now in effect in Ohio. A Franklin County judge ruled last week that the law did not violate the Health Care Freedom Amendment in our state constitution. The ACLU and transgender advocates say they plan to appeal. Joe, what does this mean for transgender minors currently taking these kinds of medications?
Well, this law prevents, you know, a transgender child under 18 years old from being able to get certain like hormones, certain procedures that, you know, would help them with gender identification, that kind of thing. And so right now, that's all in flux, but this ruling is being appealed. And one of the key things about this is we have that new the Reproductive Health Care Amendment. We have that on the books. That's what was approved last year. And if you look at it, one of the things that was in it was, you know, talking about this very issue. And so the people who are in the transgender community say, you know what, we're protected by that amendment. This judge overstepped. This ruling is invalid. They're appealing.
And we'll have to see what happens. But the law also bans transgender girls from playing on female sports teams in high school and college, Marty. So it does many, many things.
It does. And
but it is a single subject, according to the Franklin County Court.
Which, you know, is interesting. You know, what is and is not a single subject seems to get twisted from one place to another. But I just think it's important to point out that when we're talking about transgender athletes, we're talking about an infinitesimal number of people. Meanwhile, we're singling out an extremely vulnerable population. Attempted suicides among this group of people are super high. And I just think it's important to remember that when the government singles them out for this kind of treatment, it might exacerbate that problem.
Jeremy, if the appeal does not work, if they don't get another stay, this law gives a couple of months, right, for transgender minors to cease these types of hormones and puberty blockers, or they can leave the state and seek treatment elsewhere. Doctors would also be penalized. They could lose their licenses. They could face criminal charges. So it's pretty, I mean, life will change for transgender minors if these appeals are unsuccessful.
Correct. We should note, though, that this isn't the ruling on the lawsuit itself. It's a ruling on whether the law should be put on hold while the case goes to trial. And so basically this ruling means while the case is being litigated in court with all the appeals processes, et cetera, that the law can be put into motion. And as you said, it's not going to take effect effectively right away. It's going to take a couple of months for that to take effect. But we'll have to see what the final court ruling is on that. But at the same time, it's going to be kind of whiplash. You're going to have, especially if they end up ruling with the lawsuit that it is not constitutional or not legal, and you're going to have some surgeries that were put on hold and now could go forward and now can't go on forward. It's also interesting, you know, this is the latest court ruling in which Ohio courts have given really wide latitude to lawmakers when it comes to the single subject rule. The Ohio Constitution says that every bill that's passed has to be only one subject. You can't put 20 different things of disparate topics in the same bill, but courts have given a really wide latitude to what that means. And that's the same here, where it's under the common theme of, well, they're all laws against trans people, and so therefore it's a single subject.
Attorney General Dave Yost said he was delighted with the ruling, calling it a win for girls everywhere. But Dara Atkinson, the executive director of Trans Ohio, is, quote, furious.
I think there's consensus amongst all major accredited medical associations there is not consensus amongst fascist extremist groups that like to say they're medical associations that have no accreditation or backing or peer review.
So safe to say that this will continue to be litigated for many years to come.
Yeah, I think so. And it definitely in the months to come, because this is like a, you know, if you, even with the Olympics, I noticed that there were a lot of politicians who were out there.
Oh my gosh, the boxer. That
yes,
was such
the
a
boxer,
huge thing.
It was a huge issue. And I think we're going to hear a lot about that in the next couple of months. So buckle your seatbelt. It's going to get interesting.
A Republican state representative became one of the very first Ohioans to buy recreational cannabis last week. Republican Jamie Callender cut the ribbon at Amplify Dispensary in Coventry and bought some of what's known as Willie's Reserve marijuana. And yes, it's named after Willie Nelson. Jeremy, this wasn't a big surprise. Callender has been a longtime advocate for legalization.
Oh, I can't think of a close second if you asked me who would be the first state lawmaker in Ohio to buy legal marijuana. It would definitely be Jamie Callender if you know who he is, as well as the position he's taken in favor of legal marijuana. And it makes sense that he'd be on the at the front of the line to purchase this.
It's very libertarian of him. But Marty, there were some long lines and some sticker shock, but overall, I think the rollout of recreational cannabis seems to have gone pretty smoothly.
Oh, I think so, too. And I think it was kind of overdue. People have been waiting for this. We're not the first to this party. But I think that it went smoothly. I think what we've learned over the last 10 years is that nobody really cares about weed anymore.
Yeah. You know, we're Ohio's the 24th, I think.
Yes, 24th.
State to actually allow recreational marijuana. And I think a lot of people in Ohio have been to other states, have experience in other states.
Driven to Michigan.
Yeah, driven to Michigan, you know. So they kind of have an idea of what it is. So it lacks the big scary thing in the room, because when you know what it is, you're not going to be some of these things that you hear about it. You're going to say, well, wait, I didn't see homeless people outside the, you know, all these things that they've painted. You know, there's going to be this huge homeless population because of them, and there's going to be all these problems with, you know, crime around them and different things. But when you go in other states and you don't see that, it takes that fear away for Ohioans.
I will say Vice Presidential candidate J.D. Vance voted against our recreational marijuana ballot last year, but Trump says he's open to considering the one on the Florida ballot this November, saying he supports decriminalizing marijuana as it's being legalized all over the country. So I find it interesting to watch how Trump eventually comes down on the marijuana ballot issue in Florida.
I find it interesting to see what the price is on the marijuana, because I'm told I have not gone into an Ohio marijuana facility to see it myself at the dispensaries, but I am told that it is significantly higher than Michigan. And, you know, especially for the people who live closer to Michigan, you know, if they're just going to drive over the border, I think you're losing a lot of people up there. But it will come down, supposedly, as the supply gets larger.
I also will note that it is still a federal crime to drive marijuana from Michigan to Ohio.
No
so
one
maybe
does
pay that.
That
higher
no
price.
One does.
Yeah, so it's only theoretical. I think that, yeah, as you're saying, as the marketplace matures, it'll get a lot cheaper. I might know that when marijuana first went recreational in Michigan, it was more expensive than it is now. Oh. But I went up there in April, and it's quite cheap now.
Okay.
Moving on, Citizens Not Politicians, that's the group behind the effort to take politicians out of the state's map-making process, raised $23 million in support of November's constitutional amendment, but they've spent $24 million. They have bought a bunch of ads for the fall that have yet to air. But, Joe, it's unusual, maybe even a little weird, to keep using that phrase, to spend all of your campaign cash in August.
Yeah, there's a strategy there, because they didn't want to have that campaign cash questioned during the campaign. And the legislature just passed this foreign money bill. And it would have allowed for, you know, the state to kind of question their finances. Well, if the money's all spent, it's already gone. There's nothing to go question, you know. It's harder to connect those dots. So I think that was the reason they did it. And it also guarantees that they've got the placement they want coming down to the wires.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's not unusual, Jeremy, to buy ads in the summer for the fall. It's actually smart, right? Because it's cheaper to lock up that advertising before the rates go up.
It is, but Joe's absolutely right that this wasn't just done out of, hey, let's lock in these low prices. It was definitely done because this group didn't want to have their books scrutinized under this new ban on foreign donations, the state law that's going to go into effect. And yeah, this is something that this is a lot of money, but it's also, you know, they're competing with the U.S. Senate race ads. We'll even get some presidential ads, Ohio Supreme Court ads. And so they booked their made their reservations now for a couple of reasons.
All of the ads. We're going to get all of the ads. We probably won't get a lot of presidential ads, though.
I don't think we'll get as many presidential ads. You know, it was interesting the other day. I was asking about who is our press contact, and we didn't really have a dedicated press contact yet for the Democrats. The person they're referring us to is a regional kind of contact, and that makes me wonder. When does Ohio get their own press person? Because usually we have someone that's like one dedicated person that we call, but that's not the case right now.
If there are more internal polls showing Trump below 50% in Ohio, you'll see some ads.
Yeah.
You know, of course, that's going to say something about the broader election.
Yeah,
as
that's
well.
Going to definitely say something about that.
And if you find redistricting complicated or confusing, our next season of Untangled is going to unravel its history, how these independent commissions work in other states, and honestly, why gerrymandering matters, and where the term even comes from. And yeah, it's actually named after a guy named Jerry. So tune in starting Monday, August 26th at 11 a.m. The Ohio School Boards Association is the latest victim of a cyber attack. The attack last Thursday forced the organization to sever its connection to the internet right before students are set to return for a new school year. This feels like it's happening to everyone. I mean, it happened to the city of Columbus. They're now in this dispute over, like, the police department is worried about what was leaked. Is it just like the summer of cyber hacks, Marty?
I think this is just the brave new world we're marching into. I don't have a lot of, you know, deep knowledge about this, but I got to think with the advent of AI, it's probably, you know, there are more techniques that can be used. But, you know, there was the hack of the RNC. I think we're just going to see more and more of this.
Yeah, I do too. And I think one of the things that we're seeing more too is people are more confused with these spams and all these viral things that you can get into a system because people will click on things they're not supposed to. And they're very believable, actually.
You would think by now that we would all know not to click on those emails. But
yeah, but they're so believable and they look so real that some of them are really good.
That was Joe Ingles from the Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau. Coming up, we're getting a new leader at the Ohio Department of Transportation. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
New from The Embedded podcast, female athletes have always needed grit and talent. But for decades, they've also needed a certificate.
There was chit-chat about, is that really a woman?
And even now, they're still being checked and questioned. Their story is the newest series from CBC and NPR's Embedded. It's called Tested. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the All Sides Weekly Reporter Roundtable. I'm your host, Anna Staver. Still with us is Jeremy Pelzer, politics reporter for Cleveland.com, Marty Schladen, reporter for the Ohio Capital Journal, and Joe Ingalls, reporter for the Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau. Our Secretary of State is expanding his team to include a former supervisory special agent for the FBI, a former captain of Ohio State Highway Patrol, and a former special agent for the U.S. Secret Service. He says these hires are about election integrity. Joe, do we know what they're going to be doing and why he chose these people?
Well, one of them is Larry Obhoff, who is the, if that name sounds familiar, it's because he's the former Senate president. And let's face it, he knows the ins and outs of how legislation is concocted at the State House, how it's drawn, how it can be defended. So, you know, these people have expertise in areas that could be beneficial in a variety of ways.
And if you have questions about election integrity or voting, we're going to be taking your questions tomorrow. At 10 a.m., the Hour of All Sides will be devoted to election integrity in Ohio. And Secretary of State Frank LaRose is going to be joining us. If you have a question about voting, elections, or something you want to ask the secretary, you can email us at allsides@wosu.org, or you can give us a call now, and one of our producers will take your question and save it for tomorrow's show. The number is 614-292-8513. Again, 614-292-8513, or email your questions on election integrity to allsides@wosu.org. Marty, you wrote about new allegations against pharmacy benefit managers. PBMs are those middlemen who buy prescription drugs from manufacturers and sell them to pharmacies. What is the latest update?
So starting in 2019, as scrutiny mounted on these big PBMs, which are part of even larger healthcare conglomerates, each of which is among the top 15 corporations in the United States, as they became scrutinized starting in 2019, they formed middlemen to the middlemen called group purchasing organizations, two of which were formed offshore, even though all of their business is in the United States. And a lot of skeptics thought that this was a way of adding another layer of opacity. Well, it turns out there have been now three instances. In fact, Attorney General Dave Yost is suing one of them as part of an antitrust suit. But there have been other instances where these middlemen to the middlemen have been accused of withholding tens of millions of dollars. So it's the Federal Trade Commission is investigating. It's just another layer in this ongoing saga.
Jeremy, let's talk about the Ohio Supreme Court for a moment, because it could end up deciding what happens to unused embryos if a couple who made them ends up getting divorced. The case involves a Fairlawn couple who created these embryos 14 years ago but are no longer together. So the couple had an agreement spelling out what would happen if their marriage ended. So, Jeremy, why is this in court?
Well, it's in court because the ex-wife wants to use them to get pregnant, whereas the ex-husband wants them anonymously donated. And I mean, it's an interesting case by itself, but it also offers an early example of how the Ohio Supreme Court might interpret the abortion rights amendment that Ohio voters passed last November. So there's a little bit more to it than just the interesting case by itself.
Yeah, they're all, I find really interesting about this case is they had an agreement, Marty, right? Like they signed it and now they can contest it, which I guess is your right to do. But not only that, yeah, it's just, I don't know, I guess sometimes we believe that contracts are more set in stone than they really are.
Yes. In this instance, too, it sounds really wrenching. You know, it's hard to think of something that's more personal than this, but to your point about contracts, look at what's going on in the Murdoch family right now. I don't know if you've, you know, Rupert Murdoch is trying to get out of an irrevocable trust because he's worried that his more moderate children will take the News Corp dynasty in a more moderate direction than he wants it to.
The Ohio Supreme Court is also hearing another case on the, sorry, they have heard another case on the statute of limitations for slander and libel cases. The 5-2 decision issued Thursday said that the one-year clock doesn't start until the victim discovers that their reputation has been harmed. How did they reach this decision? Don't all jump in at once.
So this is about a Warren County township trustee who there was this Cincinnati real estate developer who about I think it was like 2013 or 2011, something like that, wrote a forged email claiming to be from this township trustee, claiming, purporting to show, like asking for a bribe. And so he created a fake email address, sent this email purporting to be from this township trustee to himself, to the real estate developer, sent it to himself. And then he kind of held on to it for like 9-10 years. And then there was another, about 10 years later, another dispute. And this real estate developer dragged out this email saying, hey, see, look, he's doing it again, this township trustee, because he demanded a bribe last time. And so the township trustee then sued the developer for defamation. But, you know, he would have no way of knowing about this email because the developer held on to it for 10 years. And so the question is, well, under state law, is it 10 years after the forged, the statement at issue for defamation is written, or is it a year after the person who's suing actually finds out about it? And so the ruling was the latter, that, you know, there was this email that it was secret for 10 years. And so this guy had no reason to sue over it because he didn't know about it.
Which seems fair, like objectively, like if he sat on it, never published it, never tried to defame him, it's almost a year from the moment you are defamed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Particularly if someone engages in a whispering campaign. You know, if I start telling you things about Jeremy that are not true. And
ooh,
you,
I want to hear this.
Oh, there's a lot. I don't know if we have enough time left in the program.
Well, some of them.
especially if it's a whispering campaign. And I don't know, as reporters, we probably are not all that eager for more ways to sue people for defamation. But at the same time, there are a lot of forces in this country right now that just lie with absolute impunity, and having ways to, you know, fight back against that's probably a good thing.
Yeah.
This was also the long con, like creating a fake email and then sitting on it for nearly a decade.
Yeah.
Like, that's, I don't know that I hate anybody that much.
Yeah, that's a lot.
The last case I want to talk about is actually one that was decided a few weeks ago about whether a boneless wing can contain a chicken bone. Senator Bill DeMora says he wants to right this wrong from the Ohio Supreme Court and introduce a bill to mandate, quote, common sense standards should be applied when hearing a case. So this is interesting, Marty.
Well, I just want to say, this is why people hate lawyers. you know, when you take something that's just, as DeMora put it, just obvious common sense, a boneless wing, you're eating it, you don't expect to have bones in it. You know, here comes the Ohio Supreme Court and says just the opposite. That's, you know, when people try to tell you day is night, night is day, it's pretty irritating.
And I want to say that the man who sued from Butler County didn't just say that he ate it and it was uncomfortable. He says that he was permanently injured by right. the bone that tore his esophagus.
Yeah, it's not a laughing matter for him. I think, though, that when you start talking about common sense legislation, that's kind of funny in and of itself. You know, when you think about all the things that are passed down either through a court or even through legislature that, you know, it kind of defies common sense, you know? So, it's definitely, here's the thing. It's a talking point for the next 2 months, and there's a big Supreme Court race coming up, and people understand boneless wings.
That's fair.
Good point.
It's the end of an era at the Ohio Department of Transportation. Jack Marchbanks, the director, is stepping down September 30th. He is moving on, and some of his key accomplishments, which I find really fascinating, is he's a jazz musician/historian who co-hosts Jazz Sunday in Columbus.
Yep. On your rival station, WCVE. He does that, and he's done that for a long time. He's also, he's been in charge of transportation
for a while.
He's had his hand in that forever, and he is a very experienced, steady person to lead that ship. And, you know, he's someone, I don't know if anyone's ever really talked to Jack.
We've had him on the show before.
Yeah, he's just the, he's a very calm person. You know, so
very
you don't
chill.
See him going out and, you know, doing things that are going to be flashy, or he's just a calm guy.
Governor DeWine has tapped a 30-year employee of ODOT, Pamela Vest Boratin. I hope I say that correctly, if she's confirmed by the Ohio Senate. The other big news at ODOT, Jeremy, is that they're going to hand out more than 1 million paper maps. Ohio has updated its roadmaps, and they're giving them away for free, right?
They are. And if you want one, you can go on ODOT's website. You can go to any of the state's rest areas and pick one up. Really, they print them as they need them. So they were running out of maps. And so ODOT had to order a new batch of maps. You know, the map itself, you know, it's not like there's a whole lot of major changes to the map itself, but it has things like just links and QR codes to get weather reports. And it has contact information for law enforcement, things like that. It even has some trivia if you're on a car trip and you need to keep the kids entertained by asking them what Ohio State flower is.
It's also a good thing to have in case your GPS stops functioning.
Yeah. If someone knows how to use them, I'm convinced that there are probably people who do not know how to use a paper map. You know how you unfold them, and I've seen people try to unfold
them. Oh, I can never refold
them. They can never fold a map. I'm like, oh yeah, you're using GPS all the time, aren't you?
Yeah. Moving on, it is now officially illegal to use drugs or alcohol to rape your spouse. So, Joe, that might sound wildly surprising or even shocking, but up until this bill went into effect last week, Ohio's sexual assault laws allowed married people to purposely get their partners inebriated and take advantage of them.
Yeah, it's one of those things that you would have thought would have been, you know,
illegal years ago.
Yeah, decades ago even. And, you know, actually, there was a vote against this in the House.
Yes, one vote.
One vote. And it was an older gentleman who really, one of the older lawmakers who didn't really specify exactly why he was voting against it, but it was very curious. This is one of those things, like the chicken wing thing, that people can relate to, they can talk about, and it's something that, you know, I think, you know, if people are trying to talk about laws that should have been on the books a long time ago, this one will be at the top.
Yeah, it's been a years-long process too, right, Marty? Like, I can remember them trying to get this off the ground for the last two General Assemblies, and they kept getting stuck.
Just the issue of spousal rape goes back, you know, far, and it's amazing to me that, you know, these laws were even on the books in my lifetime, but mm-hmm. Here we are.
Yeah.
I think there is it's a minority of lawmakers, but there are at least a couple who firmly believe that if you are married to someone, there is not really such a thing as rape, that it's an obligation that your partner has to provide that. And that there's a feeling that this new kind of law, this new law was not needed. And that's why one reason that it took so long to pass this change, and it finally now has passed.
So this is a case of them believing something but not being willing to say it publicly.
I think at least one of them did say it publicly. I believe State Rep Bill Dean.
Yeah, he was the
who voted
single no vote.
Actually did say something to that effect. I forget his exact words.
Yeah,
but
I forget his exact
words,
too.
Last but not least, it has been 1 year since the August special election. That's when a majority of voters here said they didn't want to make it harder for amendments to pass. There was a press conference last week where people advocating for Senator Sherrod Brown put the issue forward. And I find it interesting that they're going to bring this up in this year.
I think that the politics are pretty clear because it passed by a margin similar to the abortion rights thing. Mm-hmm. And as just a matter of political science, when you try to take rights away, they tend to not be very popular initiatives. And I'm thinking that there are a lot of people just want to remind the voters that this is still in play in this election.
Well, and I think they want to remind the voters who was trying to get that passed, you know, because those same people are on the ballot right now, a lot of them. And, you know, they wanted to take your right away to vote on things. So
that was Joe Ingles, reporter for the Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Marty Schladen, reporter for the Ohio Capital Journal. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you, Anna.
And Jeremy Pelzer, politics reporter for Cleveland.com, coming to us on Zoom. I hope you feel better soon.
Thank you so much, and thanks for having me.
And that'll do it for All Sides on 89.7 NPR News.